You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Just last month, for the first time in our nation's history, 18 women graduated from infantry training wearing the blue cords reserved exclusively for combat soldiers. They may not have realized it, but their legacy began 100 years ago when the U.S. recruited 300 women to serve in World War I. Those women, affectionately named the Hello Girls, operated the vital and extremely new telephone system that helped win the war. Elizabeth Cobb's latest book, The Hello Girls, America's First Women Soldiers, reveals the untold story of those pioneering women and their quest toward equality in the midst of the suffrage movement and communications revolution. Elizabeth Cobbs holds the Melbourne Glasscock Chair in American History at Texas A&M and is a research fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. Her book is published by Harvard University Press. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
You've said this book isn't just about the Hello Girls, but it's actually a three-in-one. What do you mean by that?
Oh, I love three-in-one kinds of things. I'm all about one-stop shopping. So if you want to know about...
Is this a mall, this book?
No, but it'll tell you why we were in World War I and how World War I was fought, how the U.S. got over there, and also how it wrapped together with women's suffrage all around the world, and also, yes, the third door, why women became soldiers and how they did it.
Hadn't women been participating in wars past as nurses, couriers, guides, code breakers, intelligence analysts, and even spies in every conflict beginning with the Revolutionary War? Why do you call these women the first female soldiers?
Well, they were the first to actually be recruited in uniform. They wore the brass insignia of the U.S. Signal Corps. They were under orders for court-martial if they got themselves into trouble. They had to serve as long as they were told to serve. You're in the Army now, they were told, when they wanted to go home. So, you know, they were true stand-up soldiers.
What was the nature of their work?
Well, they were the masters of the only technology in which the United States was ahead of its allies and its enemies in World War I, which was telecommunications. And this is a period of time where every phone had to be literally connected by somebody sitting back, in a telephone exchange. Although in this case... Putting a plug into a hole and talking and with people. Because you couldn't dial. You had to lift a handle and someone would say, number, please.
So they were like the telephone operators in offices.
They were, but telephones were critical in World War I. Every single advance, every directive to retreat or fire or to cease fire was made by telephone.
So were they working on the front?
They were very close. The majority were behind the lines, but they were in France. Some were under bombardment in Paris and also near the firing line. So they were as close as General Pershing himself got.
There was a lot of apprehension in allowing women to even take part in this. What were people afraid of?
Well, they were so apprehensive that the Secretary of War, a gentleman named Newton Baker, he didn't even want to build toilets for women who were working in local cantonments in the United States because they might hang around long enough to need to use them. But they, you know, there was this thought of, well, who were these women? I mean, my gosh, they were just kind of scandalous. I mean, this is a period of time where women don't really... kind of even openly, you know, good women walk the streets by themselves.
Didn't some argue that men could just as easily have done this work?
Well, lots of folks did. In fact, that Newton Baker, as I said, just didn't even want women to be used. But what Pershing and others found, as they put it, is that women had stronger nerves than men when it came to operating this machinery and in a crisis under pressure with people yelling at you.
How were they selected?
Well, 7,100 women applied for the first 100 jobs. So in World War I, half the men volunteered, but all of the women did. So they were selected for their ability to speak French as well as English because they had to interface with French operators. They had to be extraordinarily quick. They had to be very plucky. And they were analyzed to within an inch of their lives for their security worthiness because they were handling literally in their hands all of the telecommunications of the United States Army.
Were they given preferential treatment because of the gallantry that people feel you got to help the girls?
Well, They were and they weren't. I mean, the women wanted no special privileges. And they were, you know, they were trained in pistols, was the ones who were closest to the firing line. They wore trench helmets. They had gas masks. Hmm. They had to put their gas masks on and, you know, take them off, girls, see what it's otherwise like. So they really worked hard.
You introduce us to some of the Hello Girls through entries in their diaries and letters. How much do we know about these people?
Well, I think really before we started on it, we hardly knew anything. I have a good friend who was a winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and I said, hey, here's my newest idea for a book. And he said, I don't know, Elizabeth, I don't think you're going to be able to find enough. And I actually tracked down the daughter who's now got dementia, but her husband is very well, and all the way in New Hampshire, and got the diary of Grace Banker, who was a telephone operator here in New York City at AT&T, and I found her diary, which had never been read by anybody other than her family, as well as the papers of several other women.
And what was she revealing in those diaries?
Well, you know, I think she revealed the sort of persona you had to have. I mean, here she was made the leader. She, by the way, was the only female to win the Distinguished Service Medal as a soldier in World War I. Some nurses did as well, but nurses weren't a part of the regular forces in a sense. And so what I really found is that, you know, she put it on. It's funny, I did some research. She was a graduate of Barnard College, and she'd been an actress on the stage at Barnard. And I think she pretended. She pretended what it would be like to be a stern officer and pulled it off.
But in 1920, women, including those who served in World War One, had got their voter registration cards, and we'll talk about suffrage in just a moment. The government refused to acknowledge that the Hello Girls were veterans.
Yeah, it was a really sad story. I mean, they'd run not only telecommunications during the war, but also during the Versailles Peace Conference. And when they got back, the Army said, "Who are you? What?" Ironically, the Navy and Marines had recruited women also to work at home in far larger numbers, but in safe domestic, you know, stateside assignments. But the Army women were just, you know, treated as chopped liver, basically.
So they weren't granted discharge papers, despite the fact that, as you said earlier, they lived by the same rules as other soldiers?
Yes, everything. In fact, two died of influenza in France. And when they got home, some of them joined the VFW and then were kicked out, because they couldn't produce proper discharge papers, and they weren't given bonuses. They weren't, as one woman said, all she wanted was a flag on her coffin.
And why? What was the government's reason for not doing it? Simply because they were women?
Absolutely. No, they said, well, the law does not allow women to even register, does not allow women to even be in the Army. Now, that's what they said afterwards, and that's what they were sort of saying to each other at the time, but the women never got this message.
It wasn't until 1979 that they were recognized as veterans. That's a long, long time. I would have thought that the decision would have been made earlier.
Yeah, they fought it, and they fought it. And I found these voluminous records of, especially this one heroine, I love her, named Merle Egan. She was from Seattle. And they persisted, and they, you know, there were letters coming back from Ted Kennedy and, you know, Everett Dirksen, and I mean, all the way through the 60s and 70s. But finally, Barry Goldwater and the National Organization for Women, which are not names that normally go together, prevailed.
Hmm. But most of them had died by that time.
Yeah, almost all of 30 were still alive. And one of them was Merle Egan, this woman. And she said in Seattle at this speech she gave at a U.S. Army fort there, she said, "I deserve my victory medal, not only for fighting and serving in World War One, but for fighting the U.S. Army for 60 years and winning."
My guest is Elizabeth Cobbs. Her book, The Hello Girls, America's First Woman Soldier, with a painting on the cover. Is this from the time?
Yes, that's a poster that was put out. And what it shows, is I always found it very moving, is this woman connecting these lines while men in uniform march past her window on their way to the front. And this is actually a good representation of it, because these were women who, right outside their windows, there were men coming back in ambulances, men going out, tramping to and from the front.
How much of the Army's protocol had to change in order to allow for women to be so close to the action?
Well, you know, they're just flying by the seat of their pants. It was kind of funny. In fact, this reminds me of the famous, infamous Hoboken incident. The last port of call for the first group that went out was Hoboken, and they were barracked in a bar, a converted bar in Hoboken. And at one point, they were dancing with each other, and some officers came by and said, "Hey, can we dance with you?" And the woman said, "Sure, come on in." Well, the Army was horrified, and their chaperone immediately appeared and said, "You can't dance in Hoboken." So they had to modify some things.
You're right that much like suffragists, the Hello Girls had to normalize the abnormal. What do you mean by that?
Well, so much of history is about the things that, you know, we look back on and we say, how weird is that? But that's because things that seem normal to us were, you know, were not normal back then. And so they had to normalize the idea that, of doing something like you and I are doing right now, sitting down as professionals to talk to each other and not feeling weird about that. So, you know, they barracked next to each other. They worked alongside each other 24 hours a day while, you know, being shot at, while, you know, and yet without it getting any kind of weird sexual dimension going. It was just, you know, everything, as you said, you started out by talking about the women today who are fighting in combat, and they go back to the Hello Girls.
The 19th Amendment, which granted women the right to vote, was ratified just a few years after these women returned home following the war's end in 1918. Wasn't a major argument against giving women the vote that they didn't function as full citizens and participate in wars?
That's right.
So was this cited when the arguments were being debated?
Absolutely. We have to remember that women were soldiers before they were voters, just like African Americans were soldiers before they were voters, just like white men without property were soldiers before they were voters. So going all the way back to the founding of our country, there's been this sort of idea that if you're willing to pick up a musket, or I guess in this case some telephone wires, and serve your country at the risk of your own life, that there's no reason that the country can deny you the vote. And so, yes, that argument was made by Wilson, who said to the U.S. Senate, "Women have served upon the very skirts of the battle. You know, how can we deny them this vote?" And then the arguments in Congress were very similar.
Didn't some men argue that they were protecting women and denying them the right to vote?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, there was this idea that you know, that you should wait upon a man to protect you, and men would lose their protective instincts towards women if women voted. So they made very interesting arguments, although honestly, towards the end, the very biggest arguments against women voting were really against black women voting.
In your preface, you write that the Hello Girls served as a microcosm to the ways that government resisted sex role changes at that time. How much have we gotten past that?
Well, gosh, I was writing the book thinking I was writing about history, typing out my last words.
Yeah, you mentioned Donald Trump in this book, even though he was not alive at the time.
I know. Well, I thought I was writing about the past, and I thought that we might have the country's first woman president when I was writing this. But what I also found is that, ironically, last year, not only was that going on, but the Army, one more time, came back to say that these women had not been full soldiers because they were recognized at the same time that women of World War II, who had been excluded from recognition, were being recognized. And so the Army came back last year and said, "Oh, no, 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 these women weren't soldiers. We're not going to allow them to be buried at Arlington anymore." So just last year, this whole thing came up again. And so between the election of Trump, in which a, you know, much, much better qualified female candidate was not chosen.
Well, that's your opinion.
Well, yeah. Right. Well, qualified in the sense of a record of public service. And so it was just an interesting thing to see these issues loop back in all kinds of ways.
So is the fight still being fought to get them recognition as soldiers?
Well, I think that not for these World War I and World War II women until
there were wax and waves, weren't they considered full soldiers?
Well, right. In 1943, so at the beginning of World War II, there were women flying planes for the United States who weren't recognized. But in 1943, General George Marshall came and said, "No, listen, we need to really militarize women." By the way, I always thought that was an exciting part of the story, the ways that men stood up for women, that they really did care. The men who served alongside these women were their best advocates, always.
Well, if you work with somebody and you recognize that they're doing a good job, then it's hard to deny them the same rights that other people get.
That's exactly right. I mean, I also think that if you're being shot at, you want the person who's the very best for their job right next to you. You don't care what race they are, what gender they are, you know, what their background is.
Elizabeth Cobbs holds the Melbourne Glasscock Chair in American History at Texas A&M. She's a research fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. Her book, The Hello Girls, America's First Women Soldiers, is published by Harvard University Press. What can you do to follow up on this book?
Well, I'm a novelist, so I write novels as well. And my next book is on Harriet Tubman.
Ah. Who may or may not wind up on some of our currency.
Well, she was supposed to, so let's hope that that's not reversed.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.